a number of you went to different things. Some people went to 93rd Street, some people went to 8444. I don't know who else is getting lost. We must approach. Come in, come in. My name is Fred Gwana. I'm the chairperson of the Control Committee on Mineral Resources. Next to me is
my name is Alec Chavigan. I chair the Control Committee on Mineral
Resources. And you will go this side.
I'm Fred Mikadi, a member of the committee.
I'm Eric Mikadi.
Hi, my name is Tony Huang. I'm a member of the Mineral Resources.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
This is your first meeting, eh?
Good morning, my name is Joseph Zondi from PMR.
Good morning, my name is Joel Rattel from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning, my name is Andre from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning, my name is
Kenny Fick from the Department of Labor, Halkeny.
Kristen Nkwan, Department of Labor. My name is Nick Bishop. I'm representing the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Stephen Tim from Boerdy, the Government Chief Agency.
Chris
Simpson
from Business
Jet. Nathan Evans from Eyewitness News, Stephen Evans from Eyewitness News.
Thank you very much. We have apologized. We know that you might have been coming from another venue. Is that so?
Yes.
Sorry, we're terribly sorry. We don't know who else is getting lost because the venue was changed at the 11th hour. Are you sitting comfortable, honorable members? Because there are chairs here. You seem to be...
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I must leave at 10, so I think my discomfort won't be for too long.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. Open for that person who's standing outside. Okay. Yeah, no, thank you very much. Can we get to know who has apologized? What apologies have we received?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, for the sake of the Portfolio Committee on Labour that is here, we're going to start straight with the item that deals with the matters pertaining to Corona, which I think is what generated the interest of media as well. We are in a rather peculiar situation. I'm going to ask the Secretary now to explain what happened, so that we can then have that benefit, all of us, because the main people that are involved on this matter are not here, the provisional liquidators, as well as Aurora Management. They are not with us here. Yes, we have DMR, yes, we have Department of Labor, and yes, we have labor representation in the form of NUM. I don't know how far will that take us. I don't know how much information they do have on some of the aspects pertaining to this main issue. But the Secretary will explain, because I confronted the provisional liquidators last night, and they gave me their story. In fact, they said they received the notice late. They received the notice on Friday, which gives them less than 3 days for them to be here. And as a result, they therefore could not change some of the arrangements they had. They are appearing also somewhere in terms of some of the evidence that they have to need, but they could have made some arrangements. They promised that they would send us their report in writing, which I complained that it doesn't help us. You can't speak to a document. You can read the document, but you need somebody who must answer questions on areas that are not clear, and it's going to really impact negatively on this work this morning for this COVID. But we will deal with those that are here and get to know what knowledge have they got. Some of the knowledge will be hearsay, because they are not in the center of issues pertaining to this Aurora situation. But the Secretary must explain to the committee what happened. Why were these people notified this late?
The Aurora Empowerment System, I did not get a response from them. I don't know if the numbers, of course, all the numbers, did not respond. Solidarity with the legislative said they are not available in the report on the 1st of April 2017. And then joint liquidators, they said that the questions of various questions that they need to attend to.
See, Ben, the problem is that if you haven't got correct numbers, it can't be a business of this committee. Because these people have been spoken to before. They came to these meetings before. But also the unfortunate part, you didn't come to any one of us to ask for assistance. I must say this, that this hampers the work that we are doing in a very serious way. But we are going to address your situation specifically. Your manager was here, unfortunately. We are going to discuss that later in the course of the day. But honorable members, that is the situation. Strategic workshop is not more important than the issue at hand. That's why those people said to me last night, we could have made alternative arrangements, should we have known earlier. And I told them, you know, in certain terms that parliamentary program cannot be subservient to anything else. More so when they were notified in time. The reason why I backed down is because they were notified late. And they are in the center of this matter. And here we're not dealing with just a very simple issue. We're dealing with lives of people that are directly affected by this matter. And indeed, it has generated a lot of interest. But I don't know what your take is, as one of the members, so that we can then move on to those that are here. Any comments? To say something, Honorable Lorimer?
Not yet, sir.
Thank you very much. Let's, I don't know where to start. Maybe let's start with DMR for them to give us their own knowledge and the role they played on the matter, their own understanding of where things are. And then move on to the Department of Labor so that they can update us, and then move on to the National Union of Human Workers, and we'll take the position after that. The intention was to conclude on this matter today. It's been on our agenda for quite some time. And indeed, it had to be on our agenda because it affects members of the public, workers to be specific, and therefore we needed to dispense with the item. But unfortunately, you can't do that in the absence of those people. Did they send you the report to the provincial litigators then?
No.
Okay. All right. Good. Over to you. Mineral Resources, can we hear your side of the role that you play in this whole situation?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Member, Honorable Chairperson, colleague. Our role is a department, and this will constitute the area that we focus on. Will be limited to regulatory issues insofar as application that may have been lodged in respect of the assets in question. I need also hasten and indicate that in our reporting, naturally in the absence of the provisional litigators.
Sorry. There's one housekeeping matter that I forgot. Honorable members, because of the change of venue, you are not being staffed to your right. Tea is on its way. When it arrives, you will be served. We know that you came straight from your homes to here, but it's unfortunate. The administration bunker is some of the problems that we have to deal with. Over to you, DMR.
Thank you, Honorable Chakrati. As I was saying, in our reporting, the might also be some gaps. There might be some gaps or challenges in view of the sense that the provisional litigators and the other party who are key to this matter, as the chair rightfully indicated, are not here. So we might then provide a update insofar as where we are involved. And naturally, there might be some questions that honorable members might have. Safe to say that in our reporting, we just deal with and all the lots, all the housing sites. We, everywhere we are at the moment, we are still awaiting engagement and feedback from the provisional coordinators before we are in a position to understand and indicate whether there is an application that will be able to process. So, insofar as our part relating to applications are concerned, that is the free touch. I am aware that there are some media reports that you know, we also have been privy to because mentioned the public domain relating to certain actions that have been taken by the provisional data. But I think there's best to answer on that with regard to them having found the buyer. So I think it will only be safe and fair that they be the ones who are better placed and be able to respond in that. So as I was saying earlier on, Honorable Chairperson and members, you know, our reporting, because ours is much more following through and up on what the provisional regulators and the other people they are involved in. So for now, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our members to GMR in relation to the role that they played so far? Honorable Vigani? Okay. Honorable Luca?
Chair, I hear how far GMR is the process. I don't know if the question is going to be put in GMR to answer the question, but I think the indicator should be answering for themselves. But I'm interested in knowing, again, what subjects are the supervisors or the people that are buying, supposedly buying over the men, are they not subject to following processes of acquiring their money in terms of the law for their own safety? What is the issue?
Thank you very much.
Honorable
Lucas?
Yes,
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I don't think we'll be able to do any justice to this process because we haven't got all the players. But the driving force from our side here is that the employees who have not been paid, and this is so important, more than anything else, people are surviving. We can't even survive without people. And here we are, people facing years now with jobs without getting any money.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Hulu.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like somebody from the DMR to step back from this and have a look at the situation and tell us if they knew at the beginning of this what they know now, would anything have been done differently? Was it a responsibility of the Department of Labor to get involved sooner? How did we get to this situation where people are literally starving to death? I ask this with a view to the point that could it happen again? I want to know what lessons have been learned.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horan.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Maybe also to understand DMR in this whole process, whether the two minds, Opni and Fort Clay, are still at the status of care and maintenance as far as DMR is concerned, or the status has now changed,
now that there's this possibility of a new player that come into being, the new owners that either are about to acquire these mines or have acquired these mines, if that's what we want to understand is, what is the status currently of those two mines? Also understanding that there were reports in our last engagement of this matter that the mines were stripped of their assets, including even the machinery that has been there, has been tampered with, and some have been allegedly being removed from the mine. Basically, some form of looting of assets from that mine. I know that the control and all this process is in the hands of the provisional liquidators, but just to gain more understanding on your part, whether there's any role of oversight that you're playing, of regulatory nature that you're playing up to now, so that we can then, when we meet the provisional liquidators at a later stage, then take the matter further. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start with the question asked by Honourable Member. As the Honourable Members were rightfully indicating, we are not going to be able to touch this subject matter in view of the fact that the key road players are not here. And in our response to the number of questions that will be asked, the alleged also to be gaps because of the issue of responsibility and accountability. And therefore, in how we answer some of the questions, it might appear as if we're not providing full and complete answers, precisely because of issues relating to responsibility. There was a question that was asked, which is broad, relating to the state of the employees and related issues, which I think is an issue that the honorable members of the committee can assist with, which also informs a decision to once again invite relevant stakeholders to parties. Unfortunately, two reasons directly are not here. So our response therefore insofar as that concern would be very limited. I think it would have been fair if all the parties were here, then we are able to have a comprehensive discussion, because there is also a risk that we might be seen to be pointing fingers, which I don't really intend to do. So I would propose this, if the honorable member of the chairperson of the university, a responsible kind of thing better be handled in the presence of the party. So that as a department, we don't pop out and ask you to point in fingers and other people are not here because of issues mentioned for responsibility. The second part I wanted to respond to is related to the data of the mine, both in the Northwest and in Kaldea. To indicate that the one in the Northwest currently is under care maintenance. And what I would then do, because I'm also with colleagues from
the Northwest being what? Okay.
Being open. I'll then ask that they respond to that, so the one in South.
The mine in Khartoum is basically it's basically flooded for flooding. The situation is that the underground part of the mine hasn't really been able to, the resources in that mine haven't been able to carry the cost of pumping continually for over the last 20 years. The mine has regularly required a cut to do. So we don't really believe that the underground part of the mine is going to be able to carry the when those assets are assets that's in the hands of the liquidators, I'm sure would then be sold off to be able to pay the creditors. And then in that scenario, there would have to be a new liquidation for the heavy line on the available assets on surface or underground or above. But at this point in time, it is not clear, other than from press reports, that what actually is happening. We have heard rumors, we have seen press reports, but we still need to get to a position where we definitely could have exactly what they want. Operations in the Northwest is a different scenario, as Mr. Rockefeller said. That operation is under care and maintenance. It seems like that will be solved as a going concern. There are applications and process to deal with that.
In the some degree of you may not be able to adequately answer all the questions that we have because the main player has answered. But is there some degree of monitoring on the part of DMR on both mines? For instance, are there some routine inspections that are taking place to see whether water levels are rising? If they are rising to what level, is it the possibility of this water, you know, ingressing into the neighboring, you know, water flows such as rivers, and thereby causing contamination of such water? Just for us to have a sense, because the last time we were told that instead of 9 pumps that are supposed to be operational in front of these shafts, there's only one pump that is working, for example. I don't know what is the situation right now. Is there a degree of monitoring that is taking place? Sorry, there's another follow-up question.
What is the role of the Department of Indian Information? What I've heard in the past, whenever there are these kind of crises, the Department of Water will avail money for the pumping of water from the next road, and the water goes left. And then a particular amount of money gets given to whoever is in the mine or the liquidators of the what is happening to the road, how far true is it? And if it's true, what is the role of the Department of Water? And what value does the Department of Environment bring into this matter too? The other matters related to the issues related to workers, I think, as labor for the presentation from the Department of Labor.
Thank you. Would you care to answer those?
Thank you, Chairperson. As far as the water monitoring is concerned, according to the recent report, is that in the central basin, right, the water level is about 330 meters below surface, right? And the plan is that once the water level is about 120 meters from surface, then the water will have to be treated before being pumped out or being discharged from the mine. That is why the taking control, right? And then in the East Rand Basin, currently the water level is probably millimeters below surface, so there's no problem there. And then lastly, in the West Rand Basin, the water currently is being treated before it's being discharged. Because the way problem is that the water is being discharged to surface. So that was the signal being treated. And they also plan to increase the capacity of the plant that is currently treating the water. So the water is currently being monitored in the different areas. And then the same exercise also being done in the coastal area. And also there the water level is currently at about 100 centimeters below surface. So everything that is still has been safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Just a quick follow-up question on this. Who's carrying the cost of all this water pumping and making sure that it's
safe?
Sorry, I didn't
hear you.
Mutawu, I was just saying, as a follow-up question, given that the water is being treated, who is carrying the cost? Is it the mine? Is it the Department of Labor? Is it the environment? Is it water, as Honorable Chablin was asking?
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of this work is being done in terms of water assets. So those will be the best people to be able to give us more information in that regard. I don't think it's been done at the office of the water assets.
So are you saying that
then the issues in relation to what their role is, be able to explain to us as to what has been done in the matter or whatever it is concerned. It's a matter of just that where you are concerned and anywhere you are not concerned. And I mean, in the matter that is concerned, it's not an issue that they have to be answerable to the liquidators or anybody else in terms of what should have been done. Because you already have had quite a few reports in terms of the conditions of the prepared report in terms of the money that are not taken, the licensing issues that they are responsible for as the regulator and the people in charge of mining health and safety. What is their role then in the whole matter and how far are they?
Would you care to respond to this?
I'm going to respond to the question on water. My colleagues will respond to that. There is, one needs to try and understand how this relates to the liquidation process and so on. But yes, the water level is arriving in that particular place. In the greater Gauteng period, there are three bases, the central basin, Western Basin and Eastern Basin. We are talking about the Eastern Basin right now where the water might go correctly. There is an influx of about 85 millimeters a day into that basin, and the risk is that eventually this water would flow out on surface. But because of cooperative governance structures, there is a task team between the three departments which led to a situation where the Department of Water Affairs is going to be preventing the water reaching an environmentally critical level. I'm not sure what the depth, I think Mr. Zombie explained which depth that is. That is a depth or a level that the water will be allowed to rise up to before both from a mine health and safety perspective, which we prefer that my colleague Mr. Zuni speaks about. But besides the mine health and safety issues, whatever support was required from the department's agents that are going to come to the water, from a regulatory point of view, we will definitely, and from the mine health and safety point of view, we will definitely provide this.
It's not just a concern to the mines that are on maintenance and care. The department is doing minimal monitoring there, because there's all that mining taking place, right? And then as far as funding is concerned, as my colleague has said, those mines are stopped as we speak. So again, there is minimal monitoring that the department is doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in this task team of the three departments that's been set up to deal with this. And with due respect to the presentation we're hearing, it's rather piecemeal. I feel we need a more sort of a full picture response, which maybe we would get from whoever's running this task team. So may I suggest that we look to calling whoever that is in next time we meet on this issue. And just on that, I'd like to propose that we set up another meeting in the fairly near future, because this is a matter of considerable public interest. And we give them 2 or 3 weeks, and we ensure that they come here and don't accept any excuses.
Maybe blame myself and say that maybe I take time to understand things. I thought this question was very straightforward, and I expected a straightforward answer. So the way you put it now, I don't know whether it's you or Department of Water and Health. Can please, that's for my sake, repeat the answer.
I think this is a very dangerous situation, and I don't think we're going to be able to deal with the system, because it's a base layer of the system. But what bores me, what makes me really angry, why are we proceeding with this issue? This decision that should have been taken not today, not a time ago. Why are we nursing this one? And that is what stays for us. And I, in due respect, that the department should be, it's a legal issue. And whatever they say now, it is quite serious. And the people who are there should be talking about that. And I'll say again, the poor people who are suffering are those who have not been paid and worked hard. And yet we are dilly-dallying with the whole issue.
Okay, let's take your point, Honorable Lucas. I think we've said it from the onset that we are not going to do justice to this issue, because the main threat, I'm okay. Because you see, in situations like this, you had this mine run by Aurora, who are not here. Then the provisional liquidators came into the picture. They literally took over, by law, everything else to do with those mines, until such time that they find new owners, if there will ever be new owners that would come into play, and then transfer the ownership and responsibilities and accountabilities to those new owners. Now, I think we were testing the role played by PMI, which is understandably minimal. They're talking of the interministerial committee that has been dealing with acid mine drainage. That's according to the three departments that they have said that the matter has been elevated to that level, so that whatever situation that occurs, whether it's in the central basin or it's in the Israel, the that interministerial committee is the one that takes full responsibility. And the lead department there, because it's water situation, is Department of Water. Even funding has been allocated through Department of Water. Now, I think we needed to clarify that so that it gets out of our way. Now, I think, in as far as the situation of workers is concerned, I don't like to call them as workers because they are still under the employment technical of Aurora. We were going to be engaging Aurora management directly, who were here in our last meeting, to find out are there still outstanding money that must be paid to these workers. If so, how much and how are they going to be paid? To be assisted in that regard is Department of Labor, it is here. They have received some money. They have also to go through extraordinary means to get Aurora to pay some of the money. They have to go to court at some stage to sort to seek an order of compliance on the part of Aurora for them to pay certain sums of money that are owed to those workers. And I think the Department of Labor is here. They are going to be appraising us of where things are now. But even there, we don't know the role that is played by the provisional liquidators in as far as new possible owners are concerned. So we need to then get to that part. Are the new owners, if they are new owners, taking full responsibility in terms of assets and liabilities, and what does that mean to money that are owed to us? So all of that will be only be able to be given to us in a more clear situation through the provisional liquidators who are not here today. I would then urge honorable members that let's take Department of Labor and listen to them for the area that is to do with payments, conditions of hostels, and so forth, because now it becomes the rights of workers. And from there, then we hear from the trade union that is here. Thereafter, we close the matter with a very clear decision that we want those people back here. The same teams will have to come back, unfortunately, when the provisional liquidators are called here, as Honorable Lorima has suggested, so that we have the full team again. So that nobody will say so and so is not here, so and so is not here, therefore we can't discuss the matter. I would suggest that we take the Department of Labor if we agree, honorable member, so that we can then have a sense. Even them, there are certain issues that they will refer to the provisional liquidators who are not here. But let's give them that opportunity. Can you then step down the TMR and get the Department of Labor to occupy the seats that you are occupying? Thank you.
I'll be doing the presentation relating to the situation at the Groot Clay Mine, and my colleague from Northwest, Mr. Matapela, will be doing the report back on the situation at the Orkney Mine. With respect to the Groot Clay Mine, the purpose is just to inform the Select Committee on the progress that we are making as far as the non-payment of wages and salaries to the workers at the Aurora Mine goes. Now, during the last report we presented to this honorable committee, we reported that a claim of unpaid wages was successfully brought to court, and that the court order resulted in 1,287 miners being paid a total of 2.03 million rand for unpaid wages. We also reported that we will continue
can
to...
Can you repeat that amount? Unfortunately, you don't have that up.
Unfortunately not.
You said
the amount
is?
2.03 million rand to 1,287 miners from the first time mine. We also reported, Chairperson, that we will begin the process of investigating how we can assist these miners to access the UIF benefits, because the technicality here was that the miners were not retrenched or laid off, so technically they were still employees of the mine and therefore did not qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. So we went through a process of negotiation with the mine management together with Solidarity and the National Union of Mine Workers, and we came to some agreement that said that we will officially declare that the mine is not operational for various reasons as indicated, and that the miners are not receiving a salary, therefore they would qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. So we worked with the Unemployment Insurance Fund as well, and found that we can accommodate the miners under that sort of technical condition. Going back to the unpaid wages, we also then received, after we paid out the 1,287 miners, we received 468 new claims from miners that were not included in the original court order. The value of these new claims total 1.73 million rand. We processed these claims, we verified all the information that we could have verified, and presented this to our legal services to take to court as well. Unfortunately, that process could not be finalized because the interim liquidators were then appointed, and the process of liquidating the mine started. The result is that we had to present all these claims to the liquidators for them to deal with in terms of legal processes. We also found that there's quite a few, in fact we believe it is in excess of almost 1,000 workers at the mine that earned in excess of the threshold that is set in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which meant that the department could not effectively take those matters to court. We have worked with Solidarity and with NUM on this process, and they have now consolidated all those claims, and those claims are also with the liquidators. In fact, I think the media reported quite extensively on the work that Solidarity has done to take this matter to court. So all these claims are now being dealt with through the liquidation process. With regard to the Unemployment Insurance Fund then, as indicated, we then declared these workers technically sort of unemployed in order to assist them to access the unemployment insurance benefits. So eventually in October 2011, we managed to reach this agreement with all the parties and therefore began the process of receiving unemployment insurance applications from these workers. During this process, the department received a total of 936, which I can term valid claims, from workers at the mine. We dealt with all 936, and in November we started paying out benefits to these 936 workers. At the same time, we identified that there are 1,933 foreign workers also on the payroll of Aurora, but there were various challenges with the 1,933 in that. Whereas the UIF can respond to claims that we receive or applications that we receive and that can be then processed, in this case, quite a few of these workers did not make applications, but we opted to try and be proactive and ensure that we have the records of all these people in case we can trace them, we can then assist them. And by putting them on the record, it means that when the 6 month period as far as the UI Act goes for claiming then expires, they will not be disadvantaged because we've got a record of these claims. So what we are doing, and the challenges that we are experiencing with these applications include that these workers are untraceable, and we believe that when we paid out the first 2.03 million then, a lot of them went home. So they're not in the country anymore. We also have difficulty in verifying information, because some of these miners, we believe, were actually in the country illegally and therefore did not have valid identity documents or work permits. So they're effectively not workers in South Africa. But we've opted to keep these records, and we've already interacted with Home Affairs and others to see what we can do to assist, but we're still working on this matter. So the Unemployment Insurance Fund, together with us, have now undertaken that we will keep these claims on record, and that once we can make contact with workers to obtain more information and be able to clarify their status, we would be able to assist them in accessing their benefits. with regard to the liquidation of Aurora, we've received information that this liquidation process is underway now, so we once again try to access the liquidators, to make contact with them and to begin to work with them to try and finalize these other claims for unpaid wages as quickly as possible. We know now that it is the Carbon Trust, and we were very fortunate to get a contact person by the name of a Mr. Devet, who acknowledged receipt of this 468 claims. And unfortunately, the answer that we get from Mr. Devet is that the process must unfold before he can give us an answer as to what the outcome of these 468 claims will be. We briefed the liquidators about these claims. We have provided them with all the information that we've got, the case files of every individual. We've even managed to obtain some of the payroll documents from Aurora, which we have also given to the liquidators, to verify that these people were on the payroll and what their salaries were at a specific time on the date of those payrolls. And we hope that this will assist in trying to speed up the matter of finalizing these claims. We have, sort of worked with both NUM and Solidarity in this process to try and ensure that we can make contact with workers whenever we can, as well as try and obtain information that will assist us in finalizing both the claims for unpaid wages and the unemployment insurance claim. Workers of Aurora are still being invited to lodge their complaints with us. We believe that even though the period for claiming unpaid wages and similar claims is 12 months from the date of the sort of case, you becoming aware of the case, we believe that because we've got the whole Aurora claim on record, there's a way that we can bring in all these other claims and say, well, if they've not transpired, they fall as part of the original claim. So workers will still be assisted. We register these claims with both the department and the liquidator, and we advise the unions of what we are receiving and requesting their assistance to try and finalize as quickly as possible. In addition to this, Chairperson, what I've indicated is what we can do in terms of the laws that we administer and enforce. But in addition to this, we also work regularly with both the Ekurhuleni Metro as well as with the church and charity groups in the vicinity that are providing wonderful service to these workers, especially those remaining at the hospitals. The challenges we're picking up now at the hospitals is that we really believe that there's no more than 60 or 70 of the mining workers that are still living in the hospital, and that most of the other people there are actually not workers. it's more becoming, you know, a term we don't want to use anymore, but they're squatting in the mine now, because there are families now beginning to sort of occupy these hostels, and the charity organizations, as well as the Ekurhuleni Metro, are beginning to question what assistance we're actually providing, and we're trying to make them understand that if they believe that these are just ordinary squatters, as it were, then maybe they must deal with it in terms of the laws that govern those kind of things, which we as a department can't really do anything about. It's not in our mandate anymore. So that's the challenge we find, you know. And our interaction with the miners and everything, there's now a lot of tension because of the illegal miners and the recent deaths at the mine, etc. So all these things are now beginning to surface. But we'll continue to work with them. And where we can identify sort of workers of Aurora, we'll certainly continue to assist them. But to deal with these other challenges, we'll just cooperate with all the other authorities as best we can to determine how we can assist them. That, Chairperson, is just a brief sort of progress report on where we are with Christmas. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you. Maybe just to add on what my colleague has just presented now, and reflecting a little on the Orkney. We issued an undertaking for Aurora to pay for outstanding monies. And subsequent to that undertaking, which was not honored, the compliance order was set then on Aurora. We were demanding that Aurora pay an amount of 2.5 million. Aurora failed to comply with the order and did not raise an objection to the compliance order.
So the compliance order was how much?
3.95 million. A notice of motion was served on Aurora, the purpose of which was to request the court to make the compliance order the order of the court. Again, Aurora did not file any opposing documents and did not comply still. We then took the matter to court, and the court ruled that Aurora paid an amount of 3.95 million. The matter has now been handed over to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
All right. That covers you, Department of Labor. Okay, honourable members, open to you. Honourable Chairman, honourable Lerma. Honourable Chairman, when I went on one of the committee, so over the court, honourable Madao, and honourable Vivian.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just concerned, Chair, about the employing warehouse. I just wanted to find out just how many are they documented. How are you going to contact them since they have worked, even though they are not in the country? Because I'll tell you why I'm saying that. These are the very good people.
Question concerns the Orkney mine. I don't think you told us how many workers were involved in that claim for 3.95 million.
1170.
1170. And do you know how many of them are still on the premises, on the mine premises?
No.
Okay. And then the second one, I heartily approve of the mechanism for paying these mine workers at first flight from UIA. And trust that it's a precedent that you'll use in future too, but could you tell us how long it was between the last paycheck that these miners got and when they first got some relief?
Thank you, Chair. The one issue was about the number of people involved, but there's another issue that that impinges on this. The people who are still there, you say at the opening, for instance, there might be 60 to 70 people, the rest are people who are remaining in the place. My interest is on those who are still regarded as workers, the people you are trying to help, the people you're dealing with, in terms of UIF and stuff. Right? If you're doing UIF with them, are those people also going to be included in what the department has been doing in terms of layoff training? Because these guys are now sitting there and I don't think they're working or anything. Are there any plans to include them in this kind of thing so that they are prepared to work if this mine ever comes into operation again? Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable
Mr.
Thank you, sir. I always have a problem with the fact that we can never get around figures. We had a previous experience with X9 manufacturing with Simplex, for example. Is it a problem for us to get a round figure as to how many people exactly are concerned about? Because even if you look at the figures they're taking, it's broken down figures. But they're not able to know if it's the same people being repeated, or is it an additional to another number, or what is the case? And I should think that in terms of data collection and data systems that are in place, there should be a clear record of, we are talking of so many people. And the amount of money involved, we are talking about a round figure of so much money. So that we're able to determine as to how much money is remaining for how many people and how many have been paid. There should be a tapering down of the people concerned, rather than now being worried about the people who mentioned that there are now others who are coming in to stay in the area. The other question that I have, Chairperson, is the foreign workers, the 9,933, I think it is. 1,933. The 1,933, in whatever efforts are being made to trace them, is their share of the money also still the overall amount that's been mentioned here? Or is there a separate account, or is there a standing amount of money that is owed to them as a whole?
Thank you, Sir President. I think why some of these questions are coming up is because of our experience with I'm glad you are keeping these mine workers on record, so that should anything comes back to haunt the department, for any reason. My question would be on how involved is health monitoring arrangements for these workers is being done by the Department of Labor and other departments, different departments that you might be working with.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. But something that is concluding.
To quite a few of the questions, I would not be able to respond in detail and effectively because the detailed records I don't have available with us now yet, but we'll certainly avail the details at the next meeting. But in attempting to respond to quite a few of them, the answer to the question of do we have records, yes, we do have records. And to try and to sort of just put in context how the Department of Labor operates, our laws only allows us to act for people who we can prove are in employment at a specific company during a specific period. To anybody that goes outside of that scope, we are not able to legally, fight for. We can assist and advise and interact with. But when it comes to an employer saying, no, I'm not going to do that, and it doesn't fall within our jurisdiction, our hands are then cut off. Those that we can take you to the end of the system, we do that. So the records are available, and we'll certainly avail them at the next meeting. The challenge we have in trying to contact foreign workers, one can put that down to a resource challenge. We raise this with various stakeholders, and we ask the unions to assist us, and we even ask fellow workers to assist us in contacting their fellow workers in order for us to get to assist them. But it makes it very, very difficult for us to have the resources to go out there and physically go and look for people. And that is an unfortunate limitation. That is why the best we can do is ensure that our records are kept in detail and our records are kept available so that if these people should go to a labor center in the Eastern Cape, as an example, and say I worked in Groot Vlei in Springs, it's easy for that labor center in the Eastern Cape to contact us and we'll give them all the information to assist those people in those rural areas. And certainly we've had quite a few of those already where the UIF claims and everything have been dealt with outside of Gauteng, but we've managed to accommodate and assist all the workers. So it's not as if we're doing nothing, but with limited resources and not having a function of actually going out there to look for people, it's very difficult for us to reach all these people. With regard to the question of when was the last paycheck, when we assisted the workers with a 2.03 million rand, and just to clarify, what we had done was identify the 1,287 workers who came to lodge individual claims for unpaid wages with the department. We then managed to verify those 1,287, and based on the records and the information that we have, because we need to understand, when you go to court, you need to prove what you want in court. You can't say, we think the person worked for 2 years. So we could only work on what we could prove. And what we could prove was the combined total that was owed to the 1,287 workers was 2.03 million with some change. And when that money was paid over to us, the court order then only allows us to pay those 1,287 workers and nobody else. And we can only pay them the amount that we could verify and that the court order covers, because the court order has a detail of every single worker with the amount. And we paid out the entire 2.03 odd million to these 1,287. So that money has gone, it's finished, it's, we don't have any more. Okay? So to answer the question, is there money being kept for someone from that 2.03? No, we've paid all that out. And that is where we believe when the foreign workers received that money, they then went back to their countries. So when we managed to work through the process of UIF, they were not there. And that is why we've only got their records, which we will keep alive until we can contact them or they contact us, and then they will qualify for the UIF payment. So the UIF payment is over and above the unpaid wages. And the UIF payment will always be secured because the UIF Act ensures that that is there. And that if people have lodged a valid claim within the required 6 months, even if we pay out 10 years later, the claim remains valid. So whatever happens, the money will not be lost. It's just a matter of us getting the process finalized. And that is an unfortunate process that is taking quite a lot of time. The question of how many workers are actually at Aurora, that information will also be provided at the next meeting, the exact numbers. But the payroll indicates that there was approximately 3,500 workers at Aurora. But the numbers that we could deal with as the Department of Labor in terms of our law was just around 2,300 of those workers. The rest earned over the threshold and therefore fell outside the legislation that we can enforce. And that is why we're working with only those numbers very vigorously, because that's within our what we can do. With regard to the foreign workers with UIF, I indicated the records are there. We've sort of registered claims, and therefore, whenever they come and we make contact with them, the claims will then be able to be processed. So from the UIF perspective, yes, I can say it's ring-fenced, because that's what the Act requires us to do. The issue around being technically employed, legal interpretation of the UIF Act says, is that if you are in employment and for some other reason your company is unable to continue operating or continue paying you a salary, you therefore would qualify for UIF, even though you have not technically been terminated, as it were. We regarded that when we looked at it and spoke to our legal people, that these workers, our focus is on the workers, that these workers fall into that category. When we negotiated with the Aurora management, as well as the two unions, the major unions in the mine, we recognized that if these workers are retrenched, Aurora would have an obligation to pay them a retrenchment package. and Aurora didn't have money at the time. So we couldn't allow these workers to be terminated because that would have created another problem. We wanted to keep alive their opportunity to still go back and claim a retrenchment package if that day should ever come. So that's the technicality that we try to ensure we keep alive so that there's this opportunity for workers to still go back and say, we want a retrenchment package. And we hope that, you know, we'll be able to force this thing through some way or the other one day when the money becomes available. And this is something that we want to get the liquidators to accept as part of the claim against this company in favor of these workers. Whether we're going to succeed or not, I don't want to comment on that. It's a process that we are still trying to see if we can get an answer in our favor as far as that goes. I hope, with regard to what are we doing with the Department of Health, I think the Department of Minerals would be better placed to answer the health and safety aspect of workers. Because my understanding, and I know from the occupational health and safety areas that we get involved with as the department, there are some industries that are required to do regular medical tests and checkups on their workers and keep records, etc. But I believe that minerals and mineral resources would be better placed to answer the question around the health of mining workers. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I have a question about Fulton from Honorable Brenda Lorimer.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have through a process the starting from the classification of people who have owed money. Because as you would know, for us to actually present a claim, we should be sure about people who are claiming, because there will be charge data as well. But with regard to the intervention, we do not discriminate. We are foreigners, whatever intervention be it counseling, we conclude that as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think, honorable members, there might be other questions that you would want to follow up. And as anticipated, the responses go as far as also making reference to the provisional liquidators in terms of the processes of claims. I think for now, let's ask the Department of Labor, the same as the Department of Mineral Resources, that in the next meeting we would want to see their report in writing so that it could be easy for us to cross-reference when we engage with your presentation. And that for now, let's listen to NEM and then take a final position on this matter. In fact, the final position will be when is the next meeting where we're expecting to deal with this matter once and for all. Whether we can say we will ultimately close it, it's another question. But at least some decision would have to be taken. So let's start with the Department of Labor and ask NEM to talk to us. Have you got any handouts, NEM, that you would want to give us?
To ask information is not classified, we're not empire. Our information is not classified.
Oh.
Unlike the empire. It's and council. You don't have to go to court to demand information from the union.
Okay, Imagine. Some are having tea, some are watching. Let's break just for 10 minutes to grab a cup of tea and come and listen to him and then close as much as possible.